A woman with neither property nor fortune must ward off this affliction by cultivating the beauty, brilliance, and accomplishment that will blind a promising suitor to the want of a dowry. When she is securely married, she may suspend her own improvement and turn her energies toward the domestication of her husband and the acquisition of wealthy suitors for their daughters. Still, she must never sink to complacency, but always keep sharp, for it may be her unfortunate lot to survive her spouse, and she will be thrown back upon her wits once more. This principle became the subject of debate one evening between Sir William Martin and his lady. He observed that a young woman of marriageable age must always be accomplished and handsome, while a gentleman was under no such obligation. "I cannot agree with you, Sir William," protested his lady. "It is not nature, but circumstance that determines how far one must exert. Personal advantages are no less necessary to a male than to a female, save in the case of a first-born son. He may be as coarse as he likes, but unless he is quite sickly, his younger brothers will be obliged to cultivate a superior mind, a pleasing manner, and a handsome face."
"Well, if you are right," answered her husband, who was too good-humoured to argue long with his wife, "then it is a fortunate thing for our John that he has them all."
Lady Martin could not disagree. She favoured John over her elder son, William, for the latter was a plain, dry, serious sort of person, while John Martin was a young man of extraordinary good looks and captivating manners. Upon the death of Sir William, the elder son succeeded to the title and the handsome estate in Derbyshire. He married Miss Eleanor Metcalfe, who dutifully presented him with an heir, christened James William, after her father and his. John Martin, meanwhile, was left to secure his future as well as he could, and for some time he deliberated whether he must look to the law, the navy, the clergy, or marriage to a woman of fortune. Alas, John Martin had neither talent nor inclination for the law, the sea, or the church. He was not averse to a good match, but he wanted to be happy as much as he wanted to be rich. And while there were many young ladies who were pretty and many who were rich, there were few who were both, and those did not have to settle for a second son. An introduction to the lovely daughter of a merchant named Osborne persuaded John Martin that he wanted to be happy more than he wanted to be rich. Miss Susanna Osborne possessed a beautiful face, an elegant bearing, and a lively wit, and John Martin fell so thoroughly in love as to conclude that they might do very well on his modest fortune and her £5,000. The lady's affectionate father took a more practical view of the matter, and introduced John Martin to an enterprising young man who was connected with a prominent banking house. Louis de Courcy was a second son himself. His elder brother, Sir Reginald de Courcy, had inherited a large fortune and considerable property, while the younger had to make do with an excellent understanding, diligence, and an acumen for business. Louis de Courcy was favourably impressed with Martin's cleverness and handsome manners, and had no trouble in securing him a place where he had to do little more than be agreeable to gentlemen of fortune and persuade them to relinquish their money. Into this happy union came one child, a daughter. Susan Martin was a beautiful girl who became a beautiful young woman without suffering those years of awkward transition. An active mind, a fondness for reading, and acute powers of observation gave her a precocious understanding of the world and supported a respectable measure of accomplishment. She learned to read German, speak French, and sing in Italian. She played the fortepiano in a style that was more emphatic than lyrical, but she was shrewd enough to play only those pieces that suited her spirited fingers. She possessed a keen eye for contour and expression, though her sketches were confined to caricatures of anyone she did not like. To these were added the quickest tongue in repartee, the surest seat on a saddle, the lightest foot on a ballroom floor, and most important of all, an inimitable charm of presence that livened a room when she entered it and left its mark in the dullness that followed upon her retreat. Susan Martin's beauty was particularly gratifying to her father, for his natural liberality and want of economy had them always living in a style just above what they could afford and leaving nothing over for her future.
"She will have her pick of rich men," he consoled himself, "for I do not think there is a prettier girl in all of England."